You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Lynn Nottage was last on the show a few years ago, just before she won the Pulitzer Prize in 2009 for her searing drama Ruined, which is set in the Republic of Congo during a civil war. Her latest play, by the way, Meet Vera Stark, is a comedy and a take on a very different kind of topic, the stereotyping of black actors in Hollywood. It stars Sanaa Lathan as an actress trying to break out of the straitjacket of servant roles in the 1930s Hollywood studio system. And it's just been extended for the second time, but alas, only until June 12th. And that's at the Second Stage Theater on West 43rd Street. I'm very pleased to welcome both playwright and star to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Hi,
thank you.
Lynn, some people who saw Ruined have been surprised by this new play. Did you consciously decide to do something very different?
It's interesting. I was writing this play at the same time that I was writing Ruined, and when I needed to leave the Congolese rainforest, I went to Old Hollywood. And so it was completely sort of a wonderful accident.
But you weren't just trying to be avoid being pigeonholed by writing a play that...
No, I don't think so. I think that this is where my imagination naturally took me next. Mm-hmm. And when it went up, I was actually quite pleased to change it up a little and surprise audiences, because I think that there's this expectation when you do a play like Ruined and something that's so heavy and that wins the kind of awards that it did, that I would follow it up with something equally weighty and with that level of gravitas.
Although there were some funny moments in Ruined. So you always like to write funny things, even in the middle of the Civil War.
I do. I think my default is humor. And so in many ways, Ruined was a much more difficult play for me to write.
Although this is a kind of a Civil War as well, a different kind. Sanaa, you play the title character, Vera Stark. I'm sure you've thought a lot about her beyond the lines that you deliver. So who is she?
Oh, gosh. Vera is one of the people are responding so deeply to this woman. She is my grandmother's, my great aunt's. She is Teresa Harris, who Lynn was inspired by, who was a 1930s actress who played maids and made a career out of playing maids. She's Hattie McDaniel. She's Zora Neale Hurston. She's so many of these women who had so much strength and power and potential, and who strove for their dreams and were kind of limited by this world that we live in. And so, and it's her story is still very relevant today, and I'm just having a blast playing her.
Well, you get to play her at two different points in her life, so
yes.
That helps as well. Now, Lynn, Sanaa mentioned Teresa Harris. She's not all that well remembered today.
She isn't that well known. I actually discovered Teresa Harris when I was watching a film called Babyface, which is a pre-Code Hollywood film starring Barbara Stanwyck. But it also stars another woman, which is Teresa Harris. And when
She
played her maid and her confidant. But she really sort of broke the mold of what you traditionally think about black women playing, because she didn't speak in dialect, she wasn't heavyset, she wasn't comic, she was this really lovely companion.
And you get the feeling that they actually had a friendship.
Right.
They were equals rather than the woman and her maid and her servant.
Right. So after I saw this film, I went in hunt of Teresa Harris and discovered that I'd actually seen her in many films and hadn't registered her before. I'd seen her in Jezebel. I'd seen her in The Flame of New Orleans. And I not only went in search of Teresa Harris, I also went in search of other women like Nina Mae McKinney, who was in Hallelujah, and Mildred Washington, who was in a film called The Torch Singer, which starred Claudette Colbert, and I became obsessed with these women.
Did you see a change after the Code came into effect?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that before the Code, it seemed as though there might be a small opening for these young ingenue black women who were sort of breaking the molds, that they might be able to express themselves beyond the confines of a maid uniform. But I think once the Code hit, it wasn't until the 1950s that you see black women playing three-dimensional characters. You don't see it's not until after 1950s that you see black women with relationships.
And we have changes from the whole business about whether there's one drop of blood in somebody's background, and that's going to affect her whole life. That seemed to have been a real obsession earlier.
Early on.
So now, how do you prepare for a role like this? Did you watch Teresa Harris films?
Yes, we had a great dramaturgical book full of research about the 1930s. It was really fun preparing, because, and I fell in love with this whole era of pre-code movies. I'd be like, okay, I would take my iPad and, you know, lay in bed and be like, okay, I have to watch this movie. And then I would stay up watching them because
well, Babyface is a great movie, isn't it?
Yes, I love them because they were just so, I mean, they're so dramatic and just so scandalous, but yet so entertaining. And there's something kind of comforting about those movies. I don't know what it is, but I was very entertained and kind of got addicted to them. And because the first half of the play, we're kind of going for the style of the 1930s screwball comedy. And so we were trying to get that style, which is heightened and it's quick and it's a little bit larger than life. And so we watched a lot of those. And then for the second act, which is in my part of the second act, is set in on a talk show, kind of like the Mike Douglas Show, 1973. We watched a lot of those on YouTube. I mean, thank God for YouTube. We watched so many. I watched Lucille Ball being interviewed when she was kind of intoxicated. We watched Betty Davis, Judy Garland. I watched Eartha Kitt, Nancy Wilson, Pearl Bailey, Carol Channing.
Were they all intoxicated?
No, I don't think they all were intoxicated. But Vera is kind of like I'm not doing anybody. It's for me, it's just I'm kind of the kind of person that just takes in a lot of stuff and whatever comes out. But
I'm interested in how acting styles changed. Mm-hmm. It's my sense that in a movie like Babyface, we see something almost close to modern acting. Barbara Stanwyck strikes me as a very modern actress in a time when other people were talking very much in some kind of a Hollywood movie style. Mm-hmm. And then things changed, and then I guess it was the 60s or so when we wound up with the impact of Brando and Pacino and whatever.
Exactly, that real
with
natural,
a total naturalism
method,
style.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I haven't done a lot of research on, but what I do know is there was a style of speaking. There was an actual dialect that was very artificial in those early movies that where these young stars would be trained to speak in a kind of New Englandy, you know, heightened Katharine Hepburn type dialect, which people didn't really sound like in real life. So I know that there was that. And there definitely was, Barbara Stanwyck probably comes across when you watch her as very natural, but she still was heightened. Like if you really, really examine the performances, there's a heightened kind of emotion. There's a larger than life thing happening.
Are these things you discussed with Joe Bonney, the director?
Yes, we all discussed it, and we had the privilege of having our wonderful playwright, Lynn, there too, which was so great. I mean, and that's such a luxury to have the playwright there and just to be able to get what her influences and her thoughts are. And
well, Lynn, some directors don't like to have the playwright around. They feel that it can be a disruption. Especially if the playwright's saying, no, 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 you're doing it all wrong. That's not the way I wanted that line to be delivered.
Yeah, it's definitely true. I really am thankful to Joe Bonney, who really wanted me next to her at every step of the way. And we'd lean in and have these discussions, which I know drove the actors crazy.
But
at times.
At times, but...
No, but, you know, it was... there were times that... Because the play was still being finished too, and there was that added extra element in the rehearsal process that, you know, as we're rehearsing, Lynn is saying, oh, okay, well maybe I want to change this, or maybe this is not working, and I'm going to add this. She's getting inspired in the moment. So, not only are you learning the play as it's written on the page, but you kind of have to be, you know, ready for anything. And even when we got into previews, and Second Stage is great in that we had such a long preview period before we officially opened. So we were in rehearsals and we were changing things.
So is this the first production?
This is the very first production. And because, as you know, because you've seen the play, it has a really challenging structure. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know when we're in the process of rehearsing how the audience would respond. and how it would live and breathe in front of an audience. And so the long preview period really was a gift for us.
Yeah.
When the play opens, Vera's working as a maid for a Hollywood star, Gloria Mitchell. And in addition to her domestic chores, she also helps her boss run lines for an audition. But it's obvious she wants to be an actress in her own. So she decides to try for a role in the film as well. And she uses her position in Gloria's household to meet the producer and director of the film. Do we know what happened with Teresa Harris? Is that something that might have happened in her life?
I don't know whether it happened in Teresa Harris's life, but I know that it's certainly true of someone like Louise Beavers, who began her career in Hollywood as a maid.
And then played maids later.
So I don't think that it would be necessarily that unusual, that it would be a way for young actresses to work their way into the studio system.
My guests are Lynn Nottage, whose latest play is, by the way, Meet Vera Stark, which is at the Second Stage Theater on West 43rd Street, and Sanaa Lathan, who plays Vera Stark. The play also has, you said, a complicated structure because the first part is this kind of like updated screwball comedy, and then the second act begins with a film, film that comes out of everything that we've seen in the first act. And the film within the play is called The Belle of New Orleans, based obviously on The Flame of New Orleans, which Teresa Harris actually appeared in. At least the name?
I think the name is definitely inspired, but it's not based. It's a very different story than The Flame of New Orleans.
Well, most audience members will immediately make associations with Gone with the Wind.
Which is an association that I don't back away from.
Uh-huh.
Definitely when I was sitting down writing this play, I was thinking about Gone with the Wind and those actors who by and large, probably didn't want to play those roles, but they were the only opportunities available to them. And in the case of Hattie McDaniels was spectacular in the film, even though when I see that film, it still makes me cringe. But there's part of me that's delighted to see her up there doing what she does so incredibly well.
But it also must have been fun for you to write that kind of old school Southern epic dialogue.
Oh, it was delicious for me. And in writing this play, because I got to play with three different styles, I got to play with screwball comedy, I got to play with the melodramas, and then sort of bump forward to the 1970s where I could play with the talk shows that I grew up on, like Mike Douglas and Dick Cavett.
And you also make fun of the scholarly symposium where people go back and offer their opinions about the implications of a career from the past.
It's very hard to sum up when people say, what is it about?
It just means you're making fun of a lot of different things.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like you got to just come see it because there's so many. I love the multimedia aspect of it, and I think it's such a surprise to people. I always get so giddy when I'm in the dressing room at the beginning of the second act when I can hear the film being played because I'm just like, it's just so delicious to me that they get to see this. And
well, when did you film it? It's a black and white film.
Yes, we filmed
during it. During rehearsal?
Yes, we came in a week early. We usually you have a month-long rehearsal period. Ours was 5 weeks. We came in, and we did it in the rehearsal room. Lynn's husband, Tony, directed it, and
Stuart Dryberg, who is an amazing cinematographer, he shot Portrait of a Lady and The Piano, happened to be available and was really interested in shooting the film. Because
so that's why it looks so good.
That's why it looks so fantastic. But we also wanted to shoot it the way the film would have been shot in 1933. And so we use black and white, 35mm, and all of the techniques that were used during that period.
And I didn't get any close-ups because I would never have given the black woman a close-up.
That's true. Well, you've been in a lot of films, like Brown Sugar and Love and Basketball, but you're acting in a very different style here, a kind of 1930s style.
Yes, yes. I mean, you know, I started in theater before I went to drama school, and I did a lot of theater. I've been very blessed or lucky, whatever you want to call it, in my career, and I've had the benefit of playing so many different kinds of characters in so many different types of mediums, and this kind of role, I actually didn't want to do a play right now because I finished doing Cat on Hot Tin Roof in London for 6 months, and I was just like, I don't want to do another play for about 5 years. But then when I read the script, I screamed because I was just like, I have to be a part of this. It's such a juicy, iconic role for any actor to play, for a black actress to play, it speaks to my journey. It speaks to so many women's journeys. And it's just fun. Me and Lynn were just saying how charmed this whole experience has been. The cast, they're all phenomenal. And we all get along. And it's just...
Well, of course, it's a short run. Does that make it easier to get along?
You know what? I don't know. Maybe, but we'll never know.
And it has to end at the end of the month. In fact, the middle of the month, June 12th, because something else is coming into the second stage.
Yes, unfortunately, that is the case.
Well, maybe we'll put it out there that it'll have some other kind of life after this, but we don't know when.
Well, part of the fun for you, I'm sure, Sanaa, is that you're not just playing Vera as a young woman, but mm-hmm. as somebody in her later years.
68.
a lot older than you are.
Yes.
Is this the first time you've ever done that, age that much?
I think so. I mean, I did a lot of character work, so I wasn't afraid of the challenge of it, but that was definitely one of the things that excited me. The fact that she is, not only is she older, but she's you know, kind of intoxicated, and you know that the whole playing drunk thing has always been a fear of mine. I think it is of a lot of actors, because it's really hard to get right. And so
if you play drunk,
yeah,
then it's not convincing.
Yeah.
You have to play drunk as though you're not drunk.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which is the actors have told me that, and
yeah.
And it really makes sense. You know, when they're staggering all over the place, you don't believe it for a moment.
You don't.
Lynn, this is a play about stereotyping, and all of the peripheral characters are stereotypes as well. There's the Jewish studio head, the slick talk show host, the radical lesbian film critic dressed in army surplus fatigues. Are you saying that anyone could be turned into a stereotype?
Well, I think that I was really interested in the ways in which we all perform race, and we're asked to perform it, not only in the media, but in our everyday lives. So I think that that's why each of the characters is drawn in very broad terms.
Is it true that there is a film version of Ruined in the works?
I'm working on it.
Mm. So it's just right now.
Right now it's in development, as they say. Yeah.
I'm assuming you're also working on another play, since you wrote this play at the same time that you were writing Ruin.
I actually am in a really exciting moment in my life. I'm at a pause, trying to figure out what I'm going to write next, and sort of frightened of that blank page. I have some ideas, but none of them have quite asserted themselves to the point where I'm ready to write them down.
Would a really clever graduate student looking at the scripts for both of these plays see some kind of a dialogue between the two of them?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that what a really clever graduate student might recognize is that both of the plays have at their center a morally ambiguous central character who's doing whatever it takes to survive.
So now, as we mentioned, this is the last of the extensions. It's been mm-hmm. extended twice, but mm-hmm. June 12th is the end, at least for the time being. So what's next for you?
I'll be going back to L.A., and I'll be hiking with my dogs, which I miss so much.
You couldn't bring your dogs to New York? We have
not
dogs
with this
here.
Schedule.
You know
no, I know, but not with this schedule. I'm in every scene of the play, and it would have been – I'm never home. I'm always at the theater, and I couldn't do that to them. But and I'll just be going back and, you know, looking for my next gig. I'm currently on a cartoon called – The Cleveland Show, which is a spinoff of Family Guy. I play Donna, Donna Tubbs, and so that's
ongoing.
And
that pays the rent, especially when you
that's
work
helpful.
In theater.
Absolutely, very helpful. And I have a movie coming out in, I don't actually know the date now, but it's in the fall. It's Steven Soderbergh's Contagion, which is a big thriller, so...
Just one more thing. When you were writing this, Lynn, did you know that you were going to have a movie and all of those other things from the start? Or is this something that just grew out of the opening act and you knew you just had to continue it in some way or other?
I think that I knew once I finished the first act that I wanted it to be a multimedia piece, and the film was absolutely part of the original conception of the play. I knew that somehow I wanted that language of cinema to be up there, and the film sort of serves for me as that bridge between the talk show and Vera Stark's early life, because we understand what she did. By and large, she did roles like that.
The cast includes Stephanie J. Block, Kimberly Hebert Gregory, Karen Olivo, Daniel Breaker, David Garrison, and Kevin Isola, and, of course, Sanaa Lathan as Vera Stark. Mm-hmm. And, by the way, Meet Vera Stark is at the Second Stage Theater, 305 West 43rd Street. If you want to see it, and it's definitely something to see. You don't have much time, just another 12 days. Mm-hmm. A couple of days, can't go anywhere, right? Because Mondays...
Eight shows a week. We have Mondays off.
And I want to thank you both so much for being with us, Lynn Nottage and Sanaa Lathan.
Thank you.
Thank you.